So in Vietnam, in the 90s, people didn't really have companion animals. They had guard dogs. And for some light afternoon entertainment, one of my neighbors set his guard dog on my little brother and me when I'm 5. And I remember running and screaming and crying. And ever since then, I've been afraid of dogs and ashamed of that fear for just as long. So fast forward 18 years, I'm 23. I've moved to Hong Kong to live with my boyfriend of 2 years. And we live in a small apartment in Yung Shu Wan, which is a village of about 6,000, about a 20-minute ferry ride away from Hong Kong, and 7 million people. And after a few months, my life in Hong Kong has become difficult. I have basically no friends. My work situation is kind of dicey because I don't have a work visa, and I'm working anyway. And my relationship with my boyfriend is falling apart. We fight all the time, and he makes me feel small and voiceless. And growing up, I never felt like I had a voice growing up with a bipolar, alcoholic, abusive dad and a narcissistic, manipulative mom who made me feel like I didn't matter. And she also told me that if people knew how I really was, they wouldn't like me. So, yes, I know, not the greatest mom, right? So I'm going around Hong Kong with all these feelings, and on the walk home from the ferry, I stop by the local animal shelter, and I see a pen out front, and I hear some squeaking, and I look in, and it's a literal pile of puppies, right? These 8-week-old pot-bellied puppies, and the shelter manager says that they're looking for some fosters, and asks me if I'm interested. If you've ever encountered 8-week-old puppies, you understand they're practically impossible to say no to. So by that evening, I'm fostering one of these puppies. I name him Bruce, like Bruce Lee. And so on one of the days that I'm dropping him off at the shelter for the day to go to work, shelter manager points to a corner, and there in the corner it's Bruce's little brother, and she says this puppy needs some extra attention because he's not making any eye contact, he's not interacting with anybody, they're worried he's not going to get adopted. In the corner I see this little puppy with his legs splayed out and its belly billowing over like a little Buddha, and next to him, about a foot high off the ground, is a 1-foot line streak of what can only be diarrhea, okay? And I didn't want to take him at first because I knew that meant that I had to give up Bruce. But after some convincing, I take him home. I name him Barry, but I call him Squirt Butt for obvious reasons. Yeah. Barry comes into my life at this point when I really needed somebody to love me truly and deeply and unconditionally. And he does. We become a unit. Like, he becomes the center of my universe, and I become the center of his universe. And he becomes so attuned to my emotions that he knows when I'm upset before I even know that I'm upset. So after a string of bad fights, I break up with my boyfriend, and I decided to move back to the U.S. And we were going to go from 60-degree weather in Hong Kong to 19 below with the wind chill. So I had to find something for Barry to wear. And the only thing I could find was this small fur-lined or black fur-lined hooded coat that said in big red letters on the back, "America, number one dog, USA." Yeah, yeah. And that's what he wore. And together, it was just me and Barry for the next few years. It was dog and girl against the world. Yeah. And but our adventures weren't over after our international move. Barry grows up to be a 54-pound lab chow mix with Dorito ears that flippity-flopped wherever he went, and a curly tail with a paintbrush tip, and itty bitty teeth that make you ask, why are they even four? When you look at them. And he jumps over puddles and he cleans himself like a cat. And best of all, he smells like sunshine. Like legit smells like sunshine. So our travels aren't over, right? When I'm 27, I decide to stick all my crap in an SUV that I rented and drive the 26 hours to DC from Colorado with a one-hour nap in between. Now, I guess you are already noticing this, but looking back, I realized that some of the issues that my parents had, I also inherited, and that move was probably fueled by a hypomanic episode. Before I got electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT, I'd get hypomanic episodes. And if you've ever wanted a drug-free way to feel like you're on drugs, I recommend having a manic episode, right? I was confident and outgoing and witty and charming, at least that's what it seemed like to me. And what follows, though, from all of these hypomanic episodes is a deep depression. So I remember sitting on the bus from the Tacoma Park Metro, feeling just overcome with anxiety, my stomach turning inside out over and over and over again. And all I could do was focus on taking my next deep breath. And sometimes even that felt impossible. But through it all, there was Barry. And just like he supported me through all my journeys, he was going to support me through this journey. And so on my worst days, I'd give Barry some scritches in the head, and he would give me some kisses. And it didn't make the anxiety or depression go away, but it did help me take my next breath. And on some days, depression got so bad that I would think of ending it. But then I would think of who would take care of Barry. I couldn't rely on my family. All my friends were back in Colorado. And so if it weren't for Barry, I probably wouldn't be here today. And he saved me. And it weren't for Barry. Sorry. Yeah. So and some days the only reason I got out of bed was because I had to take Barry for a walk. And on some days, when my depression got so bad that I couldn't work, Barry would hop on my bed and curl up next to me and let his body go limp and let me rotate and contort his body so that his face and jowly neck were on my face. I was being smothered by his fur. And this brought me flashes of joy, and they were the only things that could really slice through the overwhelming sadness that I was feeling. So after many years of searching for the right treatment, my life improves and my health improves, and I meet a wonderful man named Brian, and we get married and eventually move to Baltimore. And Barry and I would have 10 years together with lots of cuddles and hikes and camping trips. And when he gets a brain tumor at age 13, it's time for me to return the good care that he took of me when I was depressed. In the last month of Barry's life, he couldn't make it up the stairs to the second floor bedroom, so we took all the blankets down and made a nest in the living room and slept with him there. And at 1:30 a.m., on Christmas morning, he lets out the saddest, most painful cry I've ever heard him make. And he passes away at 2:20 a.m. on Christmas morning 2 years ago. The day that I had to let him go was one of the worst days of my life. And after he died, my husband and I, we sit in the nest that we'd made with Barry in the living room for a week, drinking and crying and drinking. Some people sit Shiva after death. Well, we drank Shiva. Yeah. On the 1-year anniversary of Barry's death, we take his ashes up to a hike in Shenandoah National Park, and we spread his ashes. And in that moment, I feel a sense of emptiness and fullness. And I thank Barry for coming into my life, for making me feel loved and accepted in a way that I'd never felt before. And for being my best friend, for teaching me to love with my whole heart, for giving me so many moments of pure joy. And although he's not physically here with me any longer, the sense of love and acceptance that he gave me is mine forever. Thank you.